Word was circulating that two Japanese climbers, Hiroshi Hanada and Aisuki Shigekawa, and three Sherpas were in position at high camp and planning to depart for a summit attempt that night. Singh's own climbers were of no use. Those back in their tents were exhausted from their aborted efforts on the ridge, and it would take at least 2 days for anyone from advanced base camp to reach the stranded men. Singh had no option but to implore the Japanese expedition leader, Koji Yada, to assist him. If his men were still alive, they most certainly wouldn't be after a second night, and the Japanese summit team, relatively fresh, strong, and well-supplied, might be their last chance. The conversation took place in three languages, English, Japanese, and Hindi, but Singh came away believing that the Japanese would do their best to provide whatever assistance they could. The ensuing 24 hours were fraught with confusion. Communication on Everest was problematic even in the best conditions, and the storm had reduced radio contact to the most basic and sporadic dialogue. What few reports filtered down the mountain convinced Singh that a rescue was underway, yet he also learned that the Japanese had pushed on to the summit. How could this be? By 5:30 p.m. on May 12th, as the last of the Japanese summit group pulled back into high camp, it became clear that none of the Indians were with them. There had been no rescue. When the Japanese descended to advanced base camp the following afternoon, the news was grim. They had, in fact, encountered Singh's men, and while their lead Sherpa had helped free one of them, probably Smanla, snared in a tangle of fixed lines on the second step, little else could be done, they insisted. "They were Indian climbers. We didn't know them," Hanada told Richard Cowper, a journalist for the Financial Times in London, who was accompanying a British expedition on Everest that year. "No, we didn't give them any water. We didn't talk to them. They had severe high-altitude sickness. They looked as though they were dangerous. We climb by ourselves, by our own efforts on the big mountains," Shigekawa added. "We were too tired to help. Above 8,000 meters is not a place where people can afford morality." Singh was apoplectic. How could a strong team of five have passed his men and done nothing? When had the summit become more important than another man's life? There was still more bad news. Hanada and Shigekawa said that there had been no evidence of the Indians on the summit. No footprints, no prayer flags, no empty oxygen canisters. They speculated that in the poor weather and dwindling light of May 10th, the Indians had mistakenly pulled up short, some 100 vertical feet below Everest's apex. On May 13th, Singh, still fuming, convened a meeting of expedition leaders at Advanced Base Camp, urging them to endorse a statement condemning the Japanese for neglecting his men. "This was an outrage and a disgrace, tantamount to murder," Singh said. But the other team leaders, while sympathetic, weren't so quick to take sides. It was a seasoned group, including veteran British climber Simon Lowe and Slovenian Viktor Grosselg, and they understood the extenuating circumstances at altitude, the stark Darwinian reality climbers confronted above 8,000 meters. Several people at the meeting cited previous examples of individuals who had been left for dead on the mountain. They pointed out that Singh's six-man summit party had left high camp at 8 a.m. on May 10th, dangerously late by any standard. What's more, Smanla, Paljor, and Morup had continued to push upward in abysmal conditions despite protests from their three climbing partners, who had turned back midway up the ridge. Even though he had garnered little support from the other team leaders, Singh released his accusatory statement to the press. If the Japanese believed there was no morality above 8,000 meters, then the world was going to know about it. Singh's plight might have drawn more attention had other dire events not been taking place simultaneously on the opposite side of the mountain. By the time the May 10th storm had cleared out, five more people had died, including commercial clients Yasuko Namba and Doug Hansen, veteran guide Andy Harris, and two expedition leaders, Scott Fisher and Rob Hall. It was a disaster of such magnitude that it would eclipse everything else happening on Everest for months, even years. Before long, a small library...